All right, the next case for this morning is case number 093713, Liang versus Holder. Mr. Nara?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Frank J. Noir, and I represent the petitioner Zhao Zheng Zheng. It is our contention that the BIA abused their discretion. The BIA's wholesale inability to address petitioner's evidence without a rational explanation amounts to abuse of discretion. Examples of the BIA's refusal to address petitioner's evidence in this case is best demonstrated by the BIA's own use of general terminology in evaluating petitioner's evidence. Your Honors, I direct your attention to the BIA's decision at page 3. They explain that some of the materials submitted by the respondent predate the hearing before the IJ and do not support the respondent's claim of a material change in country conditions since that hearing. However, the BIA does not state what those documents are. Again, the BIA goes on to state on page 3 that some of them or similar materials have already been considered by this board in addressing precedent decisions in which we found that they did not show material change in the family planning policy. But again, the BIA never states what these documents are. Third, the BIA then goes on to state that some of the documents do not pertain to the respondent's home area, though the record below and the more recent country reports indicate that the enforcement of the family planning policy varies from place to place. But again, the BIA does not explain properly what these documents are. And, Your Honor, the reason this becomes so important is, and then again on page 3, they also say, the anecdotal evidence that she has submitted does not suffice to show that the family planning policy has materially changed since the hearing below. But again, she does not say, Your Honors, the BIA does not state what that evidence is. It does not point to any specific evidence.
Actually, earlier in the opinion, the BIA goes into considerable detail about all of the materials that were submitted. It takes up several paragraphs of the opinion.
It does, Your Honor, but if you read it, it just lists the evidence. It doesn't it doesn't actually go through the evidence and explain why it's disregarded some of it or what evidence is actually disregarded and why it's disregarded. And, Your Honors, I present this question to the Court because I feel it becomes very important when you actually do review the evidence. And I bring the Court's attention to an investigation for CIS conducted by Susanna Liu. At our joint appendix, it's at page 120. This document states that Chinese nationals who have not obtained the permanent residence or long-term residence overseas or resident visas for 3 years or above shall be sanctioned in compliance with the relevant family planning rules and regulations upon returning to mainland China. If they have conducted any birth acts in violation of the family planning regulations enforced at the local administrative level with jurisdiction over their residence of household registration in China. The reason this document is so important is, number one, it was not available at petitioner's initial hearing. This document is dated April 17, 2007, and petitioner's initial hearing from the immigration judge was in 2003, and the BIA dismissed her appeal in 2004. This document is the first government document, to my knowledge, that actually states that the family planning laws would apply to someone who's violated the birth planning policy in the United States and had children in the United States who is still a resident of China. And the reason this becomes so important is because the BIA states in their opinion, if you look on page 3, that the country reports for China for 2008 indicate that the Chinese government has continued to implement its decades-long family planning policy, relying upon education, propaganda, economic incentives, as well as on more coercive measures, including psychological pressure, economic penalties. The enforcement of the family planning law varied significantly, and the central government policy formally prohibited forced abortion and sterilization, though there were reports that local officials had used forced abortion and sterilization to meet family planning targets in violation of national policy. The BIA has stated in their own opinion that in certain areas of China, that there is a coercive family planning policy and it is enforced at the local level. And this document from the United States government is issued in 2007 after my client's hearing in front of an immigration judge has stated that this policy may apply to them upon their return to China. And That is something that was not available at their initial hearing. This becomes even more important, Your Honors, when you review the other background evidence in the record from 2007. And I turn the court's, this court's attention to, in my appendix, it's JA212, the 1988 through 2007 farmer and city resident annual collecting standard for violating the family planning policy. This document is dated February 1st, 2007, and shows that fines in 2007 ranged for 4 to 6 times what the annual household made for violating the family planning policy. Again, this is a document from 2007 that was not available at the time of my client's hearing that specifically relates, actually, it's from Fuzhou City, which my client originates from. This is a document from my client's hometown that was not available in 2007. Strike that, not available in 2003.
These village committee reports that you're reading from, this one and then the one that you just previously read from, these are the documents that the board disregarded because they were unsigned, unauthenticated, and came from a province that there was history of fabrication of these sorts of documents.
Your Honor, with all due respect, I believe when they said that they were talking about the actual village committee letter, these documents are the background documents that we submitted with our brief that the BIA did not address at all. The first one was actually a government document.
So you're not quoting from those village
letters? No, I'm not quoting from the actual village committee letter, Your Honor. I'm quoting from the actual background documents that we submitted from respondents' hometown that the BIA listed but did not actually go through or discuss at all in their testimony, in their decision.
So this is evidence emanating from China?
Yes, Your Honor.
In what form?
I'm not entirely sure. What form were they? Oh, they're documents from respondents' hometown.
From the municipal authority, from the birth planning authorities? What specifically were they?
Well, the first document I talked about was issued by the United States government. It was good.
So it didn't emanate from China? You're reading from a country report?
No, Your Honor. I apologize. A JA-120. I'm reading from an investigation conducted by Susanna Liu. She's an investigator of Citizen Immigration Services in Guangzhou, China. And it's a Department of Homeland Security document. That was the first document I read from. It was an investigation done by her, and it was approved by, according to JA-127, my appendix, it was approved by Jackie W. Wong, officer in charge. It was upon receipt of a request dated January 5th, 2007, from Rhonda Zagwood, the Deputy Chief Counsel of ICE New York. That was the first document I'm reading from, Your Honor. The second document, at JA-212, was the 1988 to 2007 farmer and city resident annual collecting standard for violating family planning policy. It does not state where that document was issued from, Your Honor. With regard,
someplace inside of China or no?
Yes, Your Honor. The JA-213 actually shows the Chinese translation. So,
but we don't know where that document came from.
No, yes, you're right, Your Honor. Our office has provided it, and I was informed that it is from the Fujian province, Your Honor, but again, there hasn't been it's background that shed light on the issue, but again, it doesn't give the actual place.
You are into your rebuttal time now. Did you want to save some time?
Yes, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Rebecca Hoffberg, on behalf of the respondent, the United States Attorney General. The Board did not abuse its discretion in denying petitioner's motion. The Board denied petitioner's first application for asylum in 2004, and this was based on an adverse credibility finding. Petitioner never sought review of that finding, and 5.5 years later, she applied for asylum based on a different theory. Thus, this is petitioner's second application for asylum, and she did have a full and fair opportunity to present her claims before the agency. An alien like petitioner, who files a motion, in this case 5.5 years after the Board's decision, and importantly more than 90 days after the Board's decision, has to demonstrate changed country conditions arising in the country of nationality using evidence that is material and was not available and could not have been discovered or presented at the previous hearing. The agency in this case found that she did not demonstrate the criteria necessary to excuse her untimely motion. What she did demonstrate is that since living in the United States, she had a child at the time of her motion to reopen, in which she alleged she was going to have a second child, and she did, in fact, according to petitioner's brief, have that second child in 2009. And that's what her changed conditions are, a change in personal conditions. Now, there were two parts to this finding. One was demonstrating changed country conditions, and the other part is demonstrating prima facie eligibility for relief. And both of those components are important. So going back to what counsel was saying about maybe there was previously unavailable evidence, it's not enough that evidence just postdates her hearing. It has to be material to her claim, and it has to demonstrate prima facie eligibility for relief. Now, the fact that she submits a chart full of showing different fines, first of all, that undermines her claim that she could be subject to forcible sterilization because, as the government maintains, fines are imposed, economic sanctions, when more than one child is born. And the fact that these fines could be imposed does not necessarily indicate that it rises to the level of persecution, because she would have to demonstrate that her situation, that essentially she would be forced to undergo sterilization because the fines are so onerous or so oppressive, severe fines, and she hasn't demonstrated her own financial situation. In fact, she keeps claiming different amounts for the fines, too. So she points to this chart, which she talked about fines ranging from 4 to 6 times household income. In her brief to the Board, she said it could be 10 times the household income. In the village committee letter, which I want to get to in a moment, that specifically says something about 60 to 100% or 200 to 300%. So she constantly changes what fine she might be subjected to, and at no point has she shown what her financial situation is. When she entered the U.S., she claimed that her parents were going to support her, that she had, I think, $1,000 with her at the time she came to the airport interview. Clearly, it takes a lot of money to oftentimes people are smuggled from China and pay tens of thousands. The immigration judge wasn't even sure how she came to the U.S. and discredited her entire story about how she came here and her first political asylum claim. And that's particularly important getting to this idea of prima facie eligibility. So even assuming this objective evidence about potentially changed country conditions, it makes no difference if you can't show prima facie eligibility, because the evidence that was personal to her and individualized in this case was undermined for good reason, because it was letters from her family, and it was the same type of evidence that she submitted for her first asylum claim, and the immigration judge discounted that. She submitted a letter from her father saying that she was a member of this Democratic Party. The immigration judge completely discredited her claim that she was part of any political party the first time around. And so she again submits evidence from her father and her father-in-law, and there was really no reason to think that the secondhand information that they were given from people who had two children born in China was first relevant to her because she had children born abroad, and second of all, never indicated the circumstances of their sterilizations or abortions to know whether they were voluntary or involuntary. So there was really no reliable information in this case. And contrary to what counsel has said, the Board went in such extensive detail to name all of the evidence in this case, as you pointed out. And this court held in a case called Mansour that the Board is not required to write an exegesis on every single piece of evidence. In this case, there were about 35 documents submitted, and the board actually went ahead and listed all of the documents in its decision, which in my experience is actually kind of rare for the board to specifically enumerate every single piece of evidence, but it actually did in this case. And it was like a five-page board decision. And for the board to go through every single piece of evidence, I mean, that's essentially what I did in my brief. And you can see exactly why there was no need to go into such detail about so much of the evidence, because you could see based on its date that it predated her hearing and therefore is not new and previously unavailable evidence, or you could see from the title of the document that it was completely immaterial to her claim because it was from a totally different province and had nothing to do with the Fujian province where she's from, or it was a different city within the Fujian province, or it was addressed by the board in its JWS, JHS, or SYG decisions and has been constantly reviewed time and again by the courts. And there were several instances of this within the documents that she submitted, and so for the board to take the time to go through each one of those was unnecessary. By citing to these other cases, the board indicated that it had reviewed the evidence she submitted and it specifically listed the evidence.
You sent us the HLH and ZYZ decision.
Yes.
And then then we were sent the Kaplan decision just recently.
Yes.
What impact did those two decisions have now in your view?
Yeah, well, the HLH decision basically emphasized the sufficiency of the evidence and the board's ability to assign different weight, that different pieces of evidence can be accorded difference in weight. That was a main holding in that. And it was, again, going through much of the evidence that's been seen time and again. It's just a very recent decision showing, I guess we were just citing it just to show you that nothing has really changed. This record, you know, is a record that you can rely on, because the most recent board decision just confirms everything that has been argued time and again with respect to this evidence and with respect to conditions in China.
Now, Kaplan reversed the board's conclusion that the determination of likelihood or probability of persecution is a finding of fact, is not a finding of fact. In fact, the Third Circuit?
Yes, it's the Third Circuit.
Concluded it is a finding of fact. Does that undermine any authority that you place on HLH?
No, I was a little bit puzzled about the relevance of Kaplan in this case. Kaplan said that reviewing the finding of a probability of torture, that the board erred in reviewing it de novo with respect to a torture claim. And the other part of that case is entirely irrelevant. It had to do with some monetary loss and an aggravated felony, but there was just a torture claim involved in that case. It had nothing to do with abortion or sterilization or fines in China in terms of how to review that finding by the board. And that wasn't really very well explained, the relevance of it, in the 28J letter that counsel. I wasn't clear what he was trying to make of that. But, HLH was just showing, it just confirms what has been shown time and time again, and it's just a very, very recent decision in March 2010 that, if in case there was any doubt in your mind about, if things had changed since even the board had reviewed this case, well, just last month, the board decided again that conditions in Fujian province don't indicate any sign of forcible sterilizations. And this is very clear in the State Department reports, which are the most reliable pieces of evidence, and all the circuit courts have come to that conclusion. And so when you submit unauthenticated, unsigned, unsworn statements from people alleging hearsay upon hearsay, they just don't compete with State Department reports that are extremely reliable, and also with the board's...
How do we know?
I'm sorry, how do you know what?
How do we know they're reliable, other than the fact you just said so?
The State Department reports? Oh, well, they are done by the State Department, who sends out their own
You really believe everything they say is accurate?
Well, let's just say that they have a basis for their findings. They are based on firsthand knowledge of people out there questioning consulars and other people in China, and they're done very objectively without a particular interest. So these are self-interested statements by a person's family. But
I'm sure you believe that entirely. It's okay.
Yes. I see that my time is up, and unless the court has any further questions, the government will rest on its brief. Thank you.
Mr. Nora, you have a minute and a half remaining.
Just briefly, Your Honors, with regard to HLH, the standard of review they used in that case was overturned in matter of the was overturned in Kaplan, and that's why we submitted the 28J letter. With regard to the government's argument, yes, the country reports do talk about forcible sterilizations or abortions, as the BIA stated in their own decision in this case. And getting back to your earlier question, Your Honor, with regard to documents from the government inside China, I turn your attention to JA-240, the Fuzhou City Operations Situation Report form from a local town government, a village committee that talks about sterilization-induced abortions. And I also turn your attention to a newspaper article at JA-391 that was on March 11, 2007, that talked about a grandparent was being held in Fuzhou City until her...
Do you think the newspaper is more reliable than the State Department, or do you think you're at par?
Well, Your Honor, the State Department reports are going to rely on what they heard from people on the ground. The State Department...
reading newspapers.
And so do newspapers, relying from people they talk to on the ground. So I in and of themselves, I don't see why one should be weighed a little bit more heavily than the other. The State Department reports have always stated that in speaking to people on the ground. And finally, with regard to the State Department report, the fines, it's actually the country report that has said that fines can be up to 10 times the annual amount that they make, that a person makes, and that fines can arise to persecution, as the court knows that from matter of TZ. And with regard to the...
Counsel, your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.